Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Chief Steve Charing, retired federal government worker and now the media coordinator for PFLAG here in Howard County. But as always, we'd first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started?
You know, Paul, I almost felt like we should have started this show 2 hours late today because the school started 2 hours late today. I mean, you know, this we obviously the big news, the big story, we're right in the middle of it, is the snow event that we've had once again that has thrown us into panic around here. I mean, people abandon cars on 29.
You know, it's funny because not only did the Weather Channel come out yesterday with its classic, you know, winter storm warning, winter storm watch, but they came out with a special alert yesterday. My office manager picked up on it and, you know, sent out an email to the whole office. You know, conditions will deteriorate very rapidly, somewhere between 4 and 5 o'clock. How much more warning do you need?
Exactly.
I mean, get the heck out of the office, go home, get off the streets during rush hour, and, you know, maybe your car won't be abandoned.
But you know what? And it's like some people think they have to be snow heroes. I can handle the snow. I'm not worried about the storm. Yeah, right? So they just add to the mess out there, and, you know, they're out there on the roads and just blocking it up with everybody else.
Well, it's funny how you started the show about saying everything should be 2 hours late today. Yesterday, I had a 9 o'clock meeting, and, you know, I got up in the morning, 6 o'clock, shoveled my
driveway out.
You know, got my put on my suit, and I'm heading out of my neighborhood. I'm the only crazy guy who shoveled his driveway to make it to a 9 o'clock meeting. And I'm driving down, you know, back parts of Ellicott City, and realizing I passed like 5 cars on the way, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm either really stupid or I'm the only guy in Howard County that's actually got any work ethic left. I'm not sure which it is.
But I told you, I had a lunch appointment, okay? By noon, it was fine. I mean, I drove around yesterday. You did, too. Noon, it was clear yesterday.
It wasn't perfect, but it was passable.
It was passable. My lunch appointment called and canceled. So, but, you know, and this kind of storm hurts businesses in Howard County. I mean, you know, we're in the middle of restaurant week, and people haven't been able to, you know, haven't been getting out to the restaurants, the retail stores. I mean, the mall, we're sitting here, the mall's kind of slow, even with school out, you know. So it's this is kind of tough on the local economy.
Speaking of economy, I actually had the occasion to attend our county executive, Ken Allman's State of the County.
Ah.
Thought it was very clever that coincided with the State of the Union that evening. Not to be confused. I got all stated out that day. But, you know, it was funny. Ken was talking about some of the successes of here in Howard County over the last year. And obviously we had our blizzard last year and several blizzards. And he talked a little bit about the snow, and he commented on how every single resident in Howard County thinks that their street is the last street to be plowed. And while I don't always praise Ken Allman for everything, I do have to tell him, when I got up yesterday morning and I had to shovel my driveway, my street was already clear. So thank you, Ken Allman. Thank you, Public Works. I made it to my 9 o'clock meeting.
And you know what? I'm with you on Ken, on the cleaning crews. But it killed me because we were up early, like you, shoveling out the driveway. I had actually been out earlier before they plowed the street, got through on my four-wheel drive. And then, sure enough, though, here comes the plow. And my driveway's clean now. I mean, it's crystal clear. And as soon as he goes by, I now have a jersey wall in front of the end of my drive that I now have to dig through. So, you know.
Well, coming
back to State of the Union.
Briefly back to State of the Union. County's version of the State of the Union.
County's version of the State of the County.
Yeah, very interesting speech that County Executive Allman gave the other day. Really highlighted the many successes that we have in this community, and I think it's often
a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, a lot to be proud of, and we should be reminded of that because we really have it very good here in Howard County. We're somewhat insulated from the recession. We really have tremendous services. Our streets do get plowed, and he really highlighted a lot of that.
Laying off half the police force,
right? And to his credit, he really gave a lot of credit to all the people in our community, both within the government and outside of the government, from a community perspective.
Did he single people out like Obama does?
He did. He did. And to his credit, he singled out, I think, some very good people.
Good.
Including some former guests on the show, which I thought was, you know, very appropriate. Mm-hmm. My concern with his presentation, his speech, was the things that he didn't talk about. And Tom Cole, local blogger, actually highlighted this, I think, in his blog earlier this week. You know, we've got some issues. The state's looking at a $1.6 billion deficit. That's going to trickle down to the county. We didn't hear a thing about that. In fact, he never even used the word money or finances or budget or tax in his entire presentation.
Everything's going to be fine.
Well, no. I think
you just avoid the bad stuff.
He did address the fact that the economy is still not there and it's going to have some impacts on us.
Right.
But I don't think he gave it the attention that it deserved. I think we ought to be talking about some of the problems. Howard County is an educated community. We know we have a good life here, but we're also educated enough to know that there are some things we need to be addressing, and I think we ought to be hearing about that from leadership.
Right, right.
So.
Right. Well, anyway.
My 2 cents.
Yeah. Well, we talk about Tom Cole. Tom actually put together actually, this goes back. In a crazy kind of way, the stories go around here. This story started with Friskies. You know, the monkeys, Friskies Wildlife Preserve.
You can consider Friskies whatever you want.
Well, but, you know, the whole story about the wildlife preserve out there, Woodstock,
yes.
That the neighbor wants to shut down. Well, you know, this led to the pro-Friskies people have been very active. And at one point, they put on their Facebook page, they encouraged people to send messages and emails to Doug Miller over at the Columbia Flyer. To support their cause, and they did, and they did it in large numbers. Well, you know, Doug Miller's pushback on this was, you know, this Facebook frenzy. These people, you know, he kind of debunked the whole social media thing as not being as the same as writing a letter to the editor, and alluded to, you know, this is less than serious feedback from the community.
Old school media, new school media.
Old school media. So Tom Cole, again, you talk about his blog Hoka Rising. He took it upon himself to invite Doug out for drinks, and with myself and another blogger, Sarah Hussein, who writes the blog Sarah Says, and we met.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. There's another story there. Her name is spelled like Sarah, but she pronounces it Sarah, and you know, after 100 times, I'm finally getting that.
She appreciates that.
She appreciates that. Anyway, long story short, we met at Ironbridge Wine Company this Tuesday. And Doug's a great guy, and it was kind of interesting, you know, and it's true that it's easy to talk at people when you don't really know them or you're, you know, there's no personal connection. We walked away where we both Doug and the three of us had a new appreciation for each other's perspectives and viewpoints. Very interesting. You know, Doug Miller is a guy that, you know, we kid, he doesn't get social media. The bottom line, he doesn't want to get it. This is a guy that doesn't have a cell phone. And he's proud of that. And I don't see him ever getting a cell phone. And he had good points for why he doesn't have one. So, you know, it was interesting. My favorite thing was he actually wrote in his blog on Explore Howard, he wrote that he found that the bloggers were a little bit different than he expected, too. That we had
referring to you.
Yeah, well, the three of us. He said they weren't as geeky as he thought, and that we had social skills that were well above average.
You obviously put on your best behavior for that day.
I showered, too.
So shifting topics a little bit, our county council this past Monday evening had a work session and talked about a number of things, including the sign ordinances in Howard County. What a debacle.
Well, first of all, it's not just the sign ordinances in Columbia. I mean, I grew up here. You
can't find your way anywhere.
As kids, we loved it when we were kind of growing up, and Columbia still had model home parks all around the place. There would be people, actually, you know, Sundays were busy. People came into Columbia to see this new community and everything. And they were always going to get lost, you know, on these circular roads and stuff. And as kids, we used to love it. We'd say, how do I get to the Wild Lake Village Green?
You told them to go the wrong way.
Man, we'd send them on. And we just thought that was the funniest thing. Well, of course, as an adult, I would have been very mad. But it's so true. We tried to make this town so earth tone friendly and so, you know, understated. That we forgot that people do like to know how to get places.
Well, and I think the big topic really is these video boards that are becoming very popular.
Yeah.
A good example of one is Crab Shanty on Route 40 has a new video board up. But, you know, it's a big issue. I think our community, a little suburban Howard County that we have going here, we don't want to look like Las Vegas or County Council Chair Calvin Ball said, we don't want to look like downtown New York or Las Vegas. We want to look like a suburban, a little bit understated community.
The problem is, though, is how do you legislate these things? I mean, the technology changes so rapidly. You know, there's new innovations, and yet it seems like the legislation is always like 3 steps behind where the technology or where the trends are. You know, one last thing I want to say about the under the existing county codes, we have these signs in Columbia now, some of these neighborhood signs that look god-awful. I mean, a couple of years back, Town Center put up a new sign for all their neighborhoods, and they were pink.
Well, a lot of them have this earthy sort of, tree hugger look from back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, a lot of those are rotting out, right?
They're gone, buddy. They're gone.
But, you know, so it's going to be a challenge. I understand the council's concerns because you don't want, you know, something that once it gets old. I think it's easy to envision things when they're new. A new video board with, some flashy graphics on it or some neat interactive. But what happens 20 years down the road when it's not working like it used to? And,
you know, my gut's sort of telling me if we can't get people to agree to a 20-story building downtown, I'm pretty sure we're not going to agree to flashing neon lights.
Probably not.
So,
probably.
You know, to the council's credit, they're going to table this, and I think they're going to take a little bit more time to kind of get their arms around what does this really mean, and what are some other communities similar to ours doing, and how are they addressing the issue?
Right. Well, you know, again, we're getting to people's and their feedbacks, and I know this is kind of a rough transition. But Reservoir High School had their community meeting the other day.
Oh, this is the one we talked about at our last show with respect to some friction between the administration and the teachers.
You know, you've got some people saying that the administration's doing an awful job. Adrian Kaufman, I believe,
Kaufman,
is the principal.
Yep.
There's too high a turnover. There's too many suspensions. So it's got to be the fault of the administration. And, of course, what happens when you... This thing has blown up to be such an event now that I guess there were an equal number of people that went to the meeting saying, you know, Reservoir High School is a good high school. There's some good things happening. And some of the stuff is getting blown out of proportion. But my favorite one was, so I'm reading this article by Sarah Toth in the Columbia Flyer.
As opposed to Sarah.
If I pronounce that wrong, you'll let us know, I'm sure. Anyway, she quotes a woman named Tamara Brooks, and it says, Tamara Brooks, whose son attends Reservoir, called the meeting a disappointment. Brooks questioned the competency of Reservoir teachers, noting that after she removed her son from a classroom because she felt he was not receiving adequate attention or instruction, the teacher continued to assign her son failing grades. Okay, you pulled your kid out, and he's not in class anymore, but he's missing assignments. He's going to get failed. And then there's that.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you go with that.
That brings us to a test.
We're talking about testing. Yeah. Right, exactly. So, look, I would not want Governor O'Malley's job from a lot of perspectives, but right now from the perspective of trying to figure out how to cut $1.6 billion out of our budget. But I'm here to tell you, this article that I read the other day about his proposal to cut $1.9 million, which represents a very small percentage in the grand scheme of things, from the Maryland State Department of Education.
It's like talking about cutting
budget.
Healthy Howard.
Exactly, right. But that represents something bigger. He's proposing cutting $1.9 million from the state education budget by not requiring graduating seniors to take a social studies test about government.
Right.
So, you know, we're in this world where we're trying to promote education. We're trying to improve ourselves as a society from an education perspective, largely as compared to a lot of other modern civilizations around the world. And we're really lagging, and we've talked about this before, we're really lagging as a society from an education perspective from a lot of our other counterparts or contemporaries around the world.
Science and math, right.
So here they put this test into place 3 years ago to require that you pass this test. So you know something about your government.
It's a basic competency test.
You know, I mean, how many people can you ask who's your president or vice president, and they don't even know who it is? So this is going to force students to know a little bit more and to prove that they know a little bit more by having to take this test. Well, now they're looking to save $1.9 million by eliminating this test just 3 years after we instituted it as a requirement of graduation.
You know, I got a different take on this, of course. You know, for me, I'm like... Look, we're supposed to be teaching them civics anyway. I mean, it's not like we're saying we're going to stop teaching history and civics in high school. We're getting rid of another test. And it seems to me we begin to educate our kids to take tests.
I would agree with that.
You know, and we've gotten too test crazy, I think. You know, the kids are being tested all the time. My daughter just went through, their regular assessments, and MSAs will come up again this spring. And, you know... Always testing. Why not teaching? How about teaching and not always testing?
That's or right. Teaching them how to learn.
How to learn, right.
Yeah, the other issue, too,
or
is...
Or to want to learn.
There are other state-required tests. What are we saying about government as compared to algebra or science when we require tests there and we don't require testing here? I agree with you. This should be about learning, not about passing the test.
Right.
By the way, largely to make teachers look good so they can say, I achieved my goal. I succeeded because my right. little Johnnies all passed their test.
Right.
That's not the right approach either.
Right. I agree. Right. Well, we got other government intervention too to save money on the budget too. You got your bad driver initiative, right?
Dennis, this one's just driving me crazy. So, you want to talk about a money grab? Look, if you're speeding and you exceed the speed limit, get your ticket and move on. So this new proposed legislation, again, an O'Malley finest, would surcharge, and yes, they're using the word surcharge, which in and of itself to me suggests it's a money grab. It's not a penalty or a fine for wrongdoing.
It's a surcharge.
If you get caught going over 85 miles an hour twice in 12 months. Now, look, I've gone 85 before. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do.
You got
to
slow down.
But I do need to slow down. A lot of ways.
I bet you don't use your hands free set all the time either.
Look, I go 85, and this one's for Senator Roby, and I text, and I talk on the phone.
Give me a call when you're going to get on the roads. I want to make sure I'm not around.
You know what? If we're going to increase the penalties, let's just do that. Right. But this is such a money grab. If it's the wrong thing to be speeding and going 85, then let's just raise the penalty. If there's a legitimate public policy reason in raising the speed limit, in raising the penalty for going in excess of 85. But calling it a surcharge, come on.
You know,
it's so bad, then how come it's twice in 12 months? Why don't we just, you know, if it's bad, then it should be bad once as well.
If you get caught speeding, $1,000 fine.
Fine.
Right?
If we can justify that as a, you know.
I mean, because what this is about, it's not about, you're faced with a $1.6 billion shortfall in the state budget. So the conversation to me seems we're not talking about cutting programs. We're talking about creative ways to put this new taxes out there, or new funds out there, without getting, it's easy to be against a traffic scofflaw. Everybody, who likes them, right? I mean, it's always, you pick a good boogeyman. So
we need to spend more time rolling up our sleeves, looking at existing budgets, looking at existing entitlement programs, and finding ways to legitimately cut the amount of money we're spending. It's what we all have to do on a personal level. I think our government should have to do it too.
That sounds like Alan Kittleman talking. And speaking of Alan Kittleman, so like how I did that transition.
Dude, you get an A for transitions today. That's nice. Listeners, we need some feedback here. Does Dennis get an A?
I don't know. I have to take my standardized test. Alan Kittleman, we've spoken before, hasn't actually introduced the legislation yet.
Correct.
For civil unions in the state of Maryland, and it's such a departure from what he believes to be the central core beliefs of the Republican Party that he has resigned his role as the Senate Minority Leader.
To his credit.
It took a lot for Alan to do that. He's a class act guy, and he. He's been now replaced by Senator Nancy Jacobs from Harford County. And it struck me when we talked about this at lunch and we were kind of going over the article in the paper about it, is that there was another leadership change, too, and that E.J. Pipkin is the new minority whip, replacing David Brinkley. And David Brinkley, he's from Frederick County, Senator Brinkley, he was also in the news recently supporting medical marijuana. So it seems like, you know, there's a... Maybe some of the new leaders of the Republican Party are moving a little bit in a different direction on social issues than some of the old guard.
Look, we could have a whole show on the Tea Party and the movement of the Republican Party to the right. But I got to tell you, most people that I know that are Republicans, yours truly included, are fiscal conservatives and social moderates.
Right.
And I think there's a recognition by leadership, including Senator Kittleman, that that's really what most people want. They want fiscal conservatism and stay out of my life and let me be socially moderate.
And anybody who knows Alan shouldn't really be that taken by surprise by his support for civil unions. I mean, it's pretty much in keeping with what his father was all about.
Yeah. Well, and I think this would probably be a good time to once again introduce our guest and welcome Steve Charing to And Then There's That. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, welcome.
My pleasure.
Steve is a retired federal government employee, having worked with Social Security for more than 30 years. Now is the media coordinator for PFLAG here in Howard County and the managing editor for Baltimore Out Loud.
And you want to tell us what PFLAG stands for?
Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Okay. Go ahead.
That's it.
Oh, okay. It doesn't stand for anything else. That's it, Dennis.
That's all the letters I have.
Period.
Before we went on, I was talking with Steve. This is an organization that's been around since 1995?
In Howard County, it has, yes.
And is it now statewide, or is it...
It's a national. It's about 500 chapters around the country. There are some, I believe, in Canada and Australia as well.
Okay.
It has really grown. There are over 500 chapters nationally, and we have a few in Maryland. But this is one of the really good, viable
in Howard County,
right.
How many members do you have?
Well, it's hard to say. We don't have a membership, per se, as much as it is for a mailing list.
Okay.
We have perhaps a couple of hundred people
on
the mailing list or more, probably closer to 500.
Okay.
You know, we have meetings once a month, general meetings, that everybody's welcome to.
Right.
It's not, you know... necessarily support. It could be informative.
Mm-hmm.
We've had speakers and panel discussions, movies, things of that nature. That anyone, the whole public, can come, and it's free and open to the public, and it's confidential. So nobody can be, you know, if somebody wants to just kind of go there and not
right,
tell anybody about it, they can be there.
That can be sensitive to an organization such as
yours. It's very sensitive. Yeah, we're very sensitive about those things.
And just to take a step back, I looked at your website and looking at the PFLAG mission statement. It's really to promote the health and well-being of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons, their families and friends, through support, education, and advocacy. So it's really bringing awareness, it's support, it's educating the public about the things that gays go through, that they experience, in all that kind of stuff.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
The support part, we have a couple of other components of the support group. We have a parents forum that meets just for the parents of LGBT children.
Could be straight, and it doesn't matter.
Who?
I mean, parents could be straight.
The parents are straight.
Well, I mean,
for the most part.
Right.
They're there to, because a lot of them, this is a very difficult problem for them. Even in Howard County, we find there are folks who are very upset because of on religious grounds or other conservative feelings about it, or just old-fashioned bigotry,
right,
that they don't particularly care for that child to be, you know, find out that they're gay. So we have a support group that's done mostly by parents who've already achieved that journey and experienced it from the same part that these other folks have started out, the same starting point of denial and
right,
disdain, and have moved on to truly advocacy and you know, and right, cheerleading for everything that we're trying to do. And they're trying to they try in this parents forum to console these folks and let them know they're not alone, that if, you know, that we're open for questions and any issues that they should come to us. We also have a youth program called the Rainbow Youth and Allies, which is for 13 to 22 year old kids who just basically want to hang out. They meet twice a month at the Owen Brown Interfaith Center.
Okay.
In Columbia, where our meetings take place as well. And they hang out. We have some speakers address them and show them movies. And it gives them a safe place so they can be themselves without having to worry about school issues and parent issues and things like that. So they have something in common with this folks.
Now, the majority of people that come to that kind of an event, ones that are not yet comfortable with their sexuality, or maybe, excuse the cliche, but haven't come out of the closet?
There's some. Most of the folks who do come, you're talking about the general meetings now?
Yeah, well, the general meetings and also the Rainbow program that you have.
Yeah, right. There's another category, curious or questioning. They're not, especially teenagers who haven't really figured out exactly where they want to be at
right,
this point, or not where they want to be, but where they are destined to be. That's a big distinction, because you really don't have a choice. It's just something that will... It's not a choice. You know, a lot of people will say, especially our opponents will say, well, you chose to be gay.
Right.
And we would respond by saying the same way you chose to be straight.
Yeah, like I chose to be white.
Right. Yeah, or left-handed or blue eyes and all that. So it's an innate quality. But kids are still, you know, wrestling with the idea where they're actually going to wind up. And that's why they'll go to this meeting. But others are very much comfortable with themselves, and they're out, but they just provide support for each other and make friendships and things like that.
Now, the other organization you're involved with is Baltimore Out Loud.
Right.
And that is an independent voice of what I think you hold out as the queer community of Baltimore.
Right.
Now, it was curious, that choice in the description. I always thought of queer as sort of a little bit of a derogatory term describing gays and lesbians. And I was a little bit struck by that term in the description of the publication.
Well, it's good that you mentioned that. I had nothing to do with that description. But I don't.
That's queer.
Dennis and I actually looked up queer before lunch today. It actually does have two definitions.
I don't reject it. But in my day, back in the turn of the 17th century, there was when you're called queer, it was an insult. It was very derogatory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's still used as a means to offend people.
Sure.
It can be used as an arrow. If one chooses to be. But I think what the word used in this current context is more to embrace all that, and it's sort of like trying to rise above that.
Okay.
And we embrace, the queer community can cover so many different aspects that it would be impossible to name them all. But it's a general term, and it's not offensive when we use it.
It's not?
No, not at all.
Right, right. But if I used it?
It depends on the context.
Right.
Well, there are other derogatory terms which, you know, we don't need to go into details of, but that if they're used by people whom they describe, then it's okay. But if it's used by people other than those who they describe, it's not okay.
That's correct.
So, same thing, I guess.
It's like okay, tell a lawyer joke if you're a lawyer.
No, it's okay to tell a lawyer joke even if you're not.
Well, since we're on that subject of derogatory terms, I do want to mention that you hear this, and this is one of the things we're fighting in the school system, as early as perhaps elementary school, and certainly in middle school for sure, and it's wound its way into high school, is the expression, "That's so gay." Kids say it all the time. It may have absolutely nothing to do with a person's sexual orientation.
Right.
But what they say it in a way that what that does is to mean the person. Like, if you're doing something that's not up to where they want it to be, for whatever reason,
right,
or the clothes aren't good, or the haircut isn't good, or something.
Or maybe too good.
Or too good. They will simply say, "That's so gay."
Right.
And all that does is to show that that's a lower level. And that's one of the things we have to fight as part of our mission, in the education part of our mission, is to get rid of that moniker the school system.
Steve, it's very funny you raised this issue, because when I grew up, that term was very, very commonly used to describe exactly what you said, just things that aren't kind of up to snuff.
Right.
And I'm seeing a resurgence of it amongst my children, who are now 9 and 10 years old.
Well, you have to work on that, then.
Well, and I do, and I do.
Cindy, do you hear this?
But what I will tell you is that I think words have a tendency to take on their own meaning over time. And when I look back and use the word the way I used it, or the way I hear my children using it today, I don't think it has a thing to do with homosexuality, or it's sort of like the word queer. I think when it's used, it's not used to be derogatory towards a certain group of people. It's taken on a meaning unto itself.
Well, anyway, you know, one of the reasons we asked Steve to join us today, we haven't even touched on that yet, is civil unions. This is a big year in your community. I mean,
well, let me clarify this. I'm glad you used that term. Something that Senator Kittleman proposed.
Or is about to propose.
He proposed it as an idea.
Yeah.
He hasn't introduced it. The issue for us in our community, we're not satisfied with civil unions.
Right. Marriage, so, right?
It's all marriage equality. And this is what the two bills have been introduced in both the House and the Senate.
Excuse me. You actually are married.
I am married. My partner and I, we've been together almost 31 years, but back in 2009 in Massachusetts, we did get married.
And that marriage is recognized in Maryland?
It is now, because of Attorney General Gensler's opinion that came out last February
that
Maryland should recognize the valid marriages of same-sex couples that were taking place in states that allowed it.
How many states have that kind of reciprocity?
There are 5 states now that have it, and Washington, D.C.
Wow. So, and I want to definitely dissect the difference between marriage and civil union,
sure,
and the two pieces of legislation. But from your perspective and your community's perspective, what is the distinction between marriage and civil union?
The distinction between marriage first of all, let's go backwards a little bit. The civil unions, what that does is create a second-class status for gay folks. It does not give the same meaning as marriage. It doesn't give you the same feeling of respect that marriage does, and it does not provide the benefits and rights that married couples receive in taxation, in other matters like that, financial and other matters, just to throw in a couple.
But some of that's related to federal law, isn't it?
Federal law, yes, but there's still issues in Maryland that, you know, for example, that would still be affected by the difference between marriage and civil union. Civil unions are not portable. They're not recognized in other places, or a marriage would be recognized in, if it's even without federal intervention right now, a marriage in Maryland would still be recognized in Washington, D.C., New York State, and Rhode Island, as well as the other states that have marriage, legal marriage. So civil unions is, again, saying you're not quite good enough to reach our level of marriage. This is a separate but unequal classification, and it's not acceptable to our community. Now, Senator Kittleman knows this. He's been reached by several people in our community to try and explain the difference. Without question, his heart's in the right place. He wants to have equality for gay and lesbians. There's no question about it. It's just a tactic of civil unions thinking that might be a better sale for the legislature as opposed to marriage was probably his reasoning. I think he now is beginning to understand the distinction between the two. It's a very serious distinction. It's one that we don't necessarily have to settle for. Other states that have had introduced civil unions in the past, like Vermont, Illinois has just done that too. Have moved on to marriage right away because it does not satisfy the real purpose of marriage.
But wouldn't you, that could theoretically be a step in Maryland, too. Maybe we need to take the step of civil unions first to get people more comfortable with the idea and then just, I mean, and I say this because as I speak, the legislature is debating, or the House, the delegates are debating a measure. They have the sponsors for it.
Well, the Senate introduced last week, and then the House introduced this week similar legislation to redefine marriage. Right now, under Maryland law, marriage is defined as a union between a man and a woman.
Right.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the proposed legislation would simply redefine marriage to be a union between any two people unless the law disallows it. For instance, siblings or something
like that. That's exactly correct. So, unless it's otherwise disqualifying. It just be two people.
So, would that? I guess I don't understand. Would that then preempt a civil union bill?
No, it doesn't preempt it. You can have a civil union going, and it depends what the legislature decides to act on and what the committees decide to act on. The civil union bill, the way Alan Kittleman had it structured, was going to be where everybody, whether they're heterosexual or gay, would be considered a civil union. A lot of people may not want to downgrade their marriage to a civil union. And so he would have problems from the straight community as well as the gay community. And I think he's grappling with this whole concept right now.
Now tell me this, and I apologize, I didn't do my homework on this particular issue, but marriage, is the root of marriage, does it come from religious bases and it's really been adopted by governments as an acceptable form of a union between a man and a woman?
Well, marriage has evolved for over hundreds of years, thousands of years, actually. At one time, although people will say marriage was always between a man and a woman, that's not necessarily the case. If you go to Scripture, as a lot of people like to point to, at least selectively, people will find the Old Testament to show nothing.
Whose Scripture?
Any Scripture. will show that men typically had five wives. It was never always between one man and one woman.
Why anybody would want to have five wives?
That's why they dropped that.
So
marriage has evolved, you know, over the point of time. Now, what you were just asking about, there's a difference between holy matrimony and marriage. I think I read somewhere about a year or two ago, and I don't want to be quoted on it, but somewhere like in Maryland, approximately 40% of couples that get married in non-religious surroundings, such as a town hall, county clerk's office, courthouse, by a judge, justice of the peace.
My sister was married like that, and I was telling her about my interview today, and we were actually debating that.
Legitimate marriage.
That I only have a civil union?
No.
You're married.
You have civil marriage. And it's condoned by the state. You issued a license, and you're then able to receive all the benefits and rights and responsibilities of a regular married couple. And it doesn't have to be in a religious institution.
And, you know, it's funny. We were talking about words and their meanings earlier. I mean, we talked about queer and other connotations and gay. You know, marriage is one of those words, too. You know, I grew up Irish Catholic. I mean, marriage was a sacrament. You know, it's part of, you know, the sacraments you need to get through life. And that I think that word has, depending on who you're talking to, has different connotations. So civil marriage actually seems a little bit more benign, if you will, than just saying marriage.
Well, the bills that are introduced in the legislature and have been introduced in the previous several years as well, but died in committee. The bill is called the Religious Freedom and Civil Marriage Protection Act. Now, that's a long
name. What's the acronym for that one?
Well, think PFLAG. But what happens is that the rules state very clearly and unequivocally that no religious institution or faith-based institution, church or otherwise, is required to marry any same-sex couple if they choose not to. Now, some might still. There are very affirming religious denominations that will do that and churches that will do that. But nobody can say to us, if you pass this bill, we're going to be forced to marry same-sex couples. They will not. It's in the law, and they're clear from that. And we made that very clear that so any opposition now from organized religions like the Catholic group that's organizing and the National Organization for Marriage and a national group that's basically bent on stopping this type of progress will use religion as the argument. It's really a false argument because the bill will clearly protect those institutions. They will not have to do it.
So my understanding is there was a recent Gonzales poll that came out and Maryland sampling of Maryland residents was asked whether they favored or opposed allowing same-sex couples to marry. And 51% of the individuals polled favored allowing it, and 44% opposed it.
Pretty
close. Same group was then asked whether they favored or didn't favor same-sex couples to form a civil union, and actually you had 61.7%. Almost 11% more said that they did favor it, and 34.3% opposed it. Is that a matter of education?
It totally is. I think a lot of the people who are polled are asked the question, do you prefer civil unions over marriage? And people may just default to that.
That marriage word, you know.
Yeah, that's where the education is. Mm-hmm. The marriage is not a religious grouping, a union. It is a civil union. In a sense, that is civil marriage, but it's what you're having is the state condones it, and it's not has to be blessed by any particular clergyman. And I think it's an education process because a lot of people are saying marriage, you know, is a religious thing, and it is a religious thing. It can be, but it's not what we're seeking. We're not looking for that.
So as far as the Catholic Church, because they'll say, well, you can't be married in the Catholic Church. That'd be fine with you. I mean,
it's fine, and divorced people can't marry in a Catholic Church, too, and they still have
unless
that.
Unless you get the annulment.
They still have that prerogative to do that, and that's always been, it's their constitutional right.
So this is going to sound like a really strange question. if we go back 30 years, and you had asked an average person, how do you feel about two guys getting married? There would have been an uproar. That would have been absolutely unheard of.
Less than that, even. Less than 30 years.
Is that uproar the equivalent today of having a conversation about a father and daughter getting married?
What?
Well, my point is, if we go forward, we acknowledged earlier in this conversation that you're straight, you're white, you're gay. You know, we're all born the way we are, left-handed, right-handed. We as a society did not accept two men or two women getting married 30 years ago and thought of it as just, it was outrageous. My question is, if a father and a daughter fell in love, okay?
Is this Woody Allen?
No, hear me out. Father and daughter fall in love.
Yeah.
Is that today as strange for us as perhaps 30 years ago it was to think of two guys getting married? I guess where I'm going with this, is this a slippery slope? Are we going down a path of accepting things? And is that just a natural evolution in society? And I'm not drawing an analogy between the two as much as I'm suggesting that 30 years ago, that's maybe the equivalent of how we view that today.
I know it's not as strange a question as it came out.
Well, thank you, because Dennis is giving me a crazy look. And
that is his look.
It's normal for me.
That's the way he was born, and he can't help that.
He can't help that. He didn't choose to have that look.
And then there's that.
All right. But
David, you're sporting one, too.
Well, I think the issue of father and daughter is really a non-starter, because it would – be precluded because of being the fact that they're close relatives is in the law. I don't know any group that's about to change that or lobbying for
agreed.
That.
Or absolutely agreed.
But I know what you're saying. There was the ick factor, if that's what you want to call it.
Yeah, back, ick factor.
And it wouldn't be far back as 30 years. But don't forget there was the same type of ick factor and resistance when interracial couples were looking to marry.
Great example.
People would thought that would be an absolute horror.
Right. What about the children?
The children have interracial parents.
The kids are all right.
Yeah, kids are all right. Four Oscar nominations. So there must be something
there
to
that, there must
be
right?
something
yeah. to that.
Okay,
fair enough. So that's what I'm saying. I don't think we're on a slippery slope with this. A lot of people have said, oh, my God, what's going to happen? What's next? Animals, we're going to marry an animal. Well, that might be the case.
I love my dog.
Except the fact that to be married, you have to sign a contract. And even as smart as dogs can be sometimes, I don't think they've learned to write yet. So I don't think that's really on the horizon either. So, I think we'll just stick to our current.
You know, we gotta wrap things up. We're going into some funny areas here, but I guess as we march through this assembly, we're almost to the midpoint. I mean,
we're about a third
of the way through. What do you think the prospects are? What do you think is going to be the end result?
Well, the committee meetings are being held in the Senate, I think, early February.
February 8th.
And the House is going to do the same. The committee makeup has changed because of the election and because of the way it's structured now, where it will not die in committee. It'll go to a floor. We believe pretty confidently that we have the votes in both chambers to pass it. The
governor,
pass what? The Religious Freedom and Civil Marriage Protection Act.
Right.
And that the governor has pledged to sign it. If it's passed.
So that Alan Kittleman's initiative may be superseded by other events.
Probably, and my thinking is that he may not even introduce it.
Yeah,
and I think he might even support this.
But he got
because
the,
he's now
he,
free
he got
to
the
do
conversation
so.
Going.
Yeah, he got the conversation going. It was a very good attempt to try and embrace equality, which is what he was trying to do. I think he just wasn't clear on the nuance. Differences between the two arrangements.
By all accounts, it looks like you do have the support. The redefining marriage has tremendous support on a both Senate and House of Delegates level. If it turns out that you don't have the support to get that through, would you and your constituents support Alan Kittleman's bill?
If he introduced it, well, we'd have to regroup. We have organizations that are leading this fight. Equality Maryland is the primary organization. We'll have to see what their strategy is. I don't know what they're planning as far as the contingency is concerned. Anything can happen. Nothing is. We wouldn't, say for sure it's going to happen.
Right.
But we think we now have the opportunity to get this done. It won't die in committee. It'll be a floor debate. We're seeing people. Alan Kittleman took a very courageous stand by doing what he did, gave up his position so he can be free to follow something that his father would be very proud of him.
Right. Well, Steve, thanks for coming.
We appreciate
you.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Appreciate you joining us today. I mean, you certainly gave us a nice perspective that I think needs to be heard out there, too.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for coming by.
Thanks.
That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer Dave Bittner for making us look good on radio, and to the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on February 11th with special guest Sandy Schrader, former state senator and current lobbyist in Annapolis. Sandy will provide an inside take on the machinations and gamesmanship in the General Assembly. We hope you'll join us.